Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We're very glad to have you on this Tuesday morning, the 16th of June, 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. And another beautiful day, and we hope that it's beautiful in other ways as well for you. We have a lot to discuss this morning, some good, some bad, some really bad, and we'll talk about it all, and we welcome your thoughts. Again, panel at WAMC.org to join us. Let me introduce the group who will be slicing and dicing these issues as if they were a wonderful Ginsu knife. WAMC Alan Chartok, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Wonderful. Good. That's always an advance in the game.
Half the battle right there, isn't it?
It is.
Well, good to hear your voice. Former associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, is here. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Joe. How you doing?
I'm well. Thank you very much. Good to have you here as always. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary R. Mayo is with us. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, we can hear you, too.
Yeah,
it's good. Also, counterterrorism expert and best-selling author Malcolm Nance is with us. Good morning, Malcolm. How are you?
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Wonderful to have you here. Thank you for taking us up on our invitation. We appreciate all of you being with us. And again, you can join us, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Okay, so let's get going with what is happening in the world. As we were on the air yesterday, came the announcement from the Supreme Court on the landmark decision regarding gay rights, and really one of the most sweeping LGBT rights rulings in the court's history, protecting gay and transgender people from workplace discrimination. This morning, the question is, well, amongst conservatives is, well, how did Justice Gorsuch get involved in this? And not only voting, but, oh my goodness, writing the majority opinion. Gorsuch is a profoundly conservative jurist and one of two appointments President Trump has made to the Supreme Court that Republicans expected would fundamentally shape it to their liking for a generation. But on Monday, Justice Gorsuch led the way on this ruling, one of the most, as I said, sweeping LGBT rights rulings in the court's history, and confounding those who thought he would be a reliable conservative on those issues. You will remember Justice Gorsuch took the place of Justice Antonin Scalia, who died in February of 2016, but whose seat was kept open by Senator Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, until President Barack Obama had left the White House. Mr. Trump then made Justice Gorsuch his first appointment to the court less than 2 weeks after his inauguration. Justice Scalia, of course, left a legacy as one of the court's most fiercely conservative members, and while more courteous and mild-mannered than his predecessor, Justice Gorsuch has largely echoed his legal philosophy from the bench. So, Alan, what do you make of this?
Well, I don't know what to make of it. It could be a double, triple, quadruple fake-out, as I have often said. We have a bunch of major rulings coming up from the court. I do think that these judges have been looking out in the streets and seeing what's going on. Now, I have a feeling this one was in the works before, but I do think that there's a Monmouth change happening in this country. And Gorsuch knows it, and one only wonders whether, you know, he got so beaten up in his appointment hearings that maybe he wanted to show everybody a thing or two that he was an independent thinker. But I do think that it's possible that it was done to preempt what's coming next, and that's what I'm worried about.
It is right. It is interesting to see where, as you mentioned, some really key rulings. The big one, DACA, is expected maybe as early as Thursday, if not next week. Rosemary Armeo.
First, I want to say to all the conservatives who thought that they were going to get everything they wanted. Yesterday was delicious because of that. I think that Gorsuch wrote the opinion because John Roberts is smart. He's the, as the senior judge who was in the majority. He got to pick who wrote it. He could have written it himself. Instead, he gave it to Gorsuch, so that he's become, when you write something, you own it. You become, it becomes your baby. And so plainly something was going on there, and it was pretty smart. Gorsuch now has to defend his decision, not just apologize and move on to it. I think this has a lot more to do with Gorsuch's idea of textualism, that he wrote a book on it. He spoke about it at his hearing. He's made his whole reputation on just doing what the law says. It does not matter what the lawmaker intended or what groups around you thought about it. And he saw a clear chance here to put that into action. So he's not like Justice Black or Justice Kennedy who take on a cause that you would not expect them to have and carry it through. He is just as likely to slam gays or blacks or any other group that's helped by a decision. He's just as likely to slam them in the next one if it allows him to remain ideologically pure to his ideas. And finally, he is a judge. I mean, he is, unlike many of the appeals court judges that Trump's putting into place, this guy actually is smart and knows what he's doing. So I applaud the decision. I'm so happy he stuck with his. It's the only decision he could have made based on his judicial philosophy, and I'm really glad he did it.
Malcolm Nance.
Well, I think what we saw was, as Rosemary said, a judge being a judge. As I understand it, they had to the question before them was a question of whether the previous rulings about, a person's sexuality could be waived or abrogated for gays and lesbians, LGBTQ type people. And he saw that they all fit into one whole. And that was just a simple matter of jurisprudence, as opposed to what conservatives want, which is they want firebrand culture warriors who will act like drones, like Clarence Thomas and how Antonin Scalia was, which is where they would do their activism from the bench. And I think Judge Gorsuch decided that he wanted to be a Supreme Court judge. I'm not sure that there's 11th dimension chess going on here, that they're going to screw us on some other component. I think that happens just as a matter of course. It's a conservative bench, and so long as the bench remains conservative, they can be slightly progressive on social matters that almost 80% of the country agrees with, so it's not a hard push. But they could definitely make things interesting for other issues, including issues of abortion. Quite surprised they didn't take up the gun issue. I think they wanted to kick that one down the road.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, I think that to decide whether Gorsuch is a turncoat and betrayed the legacy of Scalia here, you need a lot more information. This is just one decision, an incredibly important decision, which is great news. I mean, it really is affirming to see a decision like this from our Supreme Court. But it doesn't mean he's going to cross over and align with the four court liberals. I think the guy to watch, and we've been saying this all along, is John Roberts, the Chief Justice. He seems to be the new voice of moderation, the potential swing vote. And I agree. I think Rosemary was right. He could have written the decision himself, Roberts, but he handed it off to Gorsuch, which makes a statement that regardless of political ideologies, conservative, liberal, et cetera, society has changed, and this is recognition of that. It was like the allowing same-sex marriage. It already had changed. I mean, society already had accepted it by the time it got to the Supreme Court, and all they did was put their stamp of approval on it. Well, now they've formally put their stamp of approval that LGBT means sex discrimination, which is barred by the civil rights law. So it's affirming, but it's too early to say where Gorsuch is going or what's going to happen.
And Rosemary, I was struck by when you said this was delicious, and I even more so after what was done regarding trans health care on Friday.
Yeah, I know. That's completely undercut. Housing will be affected by this. Education. Oh, Betsy DeVos really got it yesterday, too. And definitely health care. So Trump can keep signing executive orders, but now it's going to be relatively easy to challenge and win them legally.
And
you also, one question. Oh, yeah. Well, no, I just wondered if Malcolm knew the answer. You know, what does this mean for the rules about LGBT service members? Does it change the president's own edict that, they're going to be barred from the service, or does it mean they have a civil right to be in the military?
Great question.
That's a very good question. I actually had that conversation with retired Navy Senior Chief Kirsten Beck, who you might recall was a Navy SEAL, a highly decorated combat veteran who became a transgendered person who is a, who is now active in the transgendered community. And he said he doesn't know whether that this rule, which essentially, says that all of the president's plans to upend discrimination, whether the White House or the Pentagon will actually follow it or take it. You know, I mean, it's a Supreme Court ruling. You would think that that would be the end of it. But this administration has been quite clever about discriminating people in the armed forces, which is a disgrace.
I also want to go back to something that you mentioned, Malcolm. We touched on this yesterday, but the Supreme Court said it will not hear appeals of a slew of cases involving gun laws, dealing a block to Second Amendment activists who seek to expand the rights of gun owners. You say they're kicking it down the road. Talk a little bit about the denial of these petitions on 10 cases and how significant that is.
Well, first off, the gun community out there, and, you know, full disclosure, I'm a gun owner, I'm a collector, but I'm not crazy. So, I mean, I'm a big common sense guy. I wish that everybody would just lock them up. Keep them in cases, folks. If you're not at the range, just keep them locked in a case and never see them. But all of these appeals, which were filed by various gun groups, were really a last-minute push that the Supreme Court would uphold a whole myriad of gun rights cases, from possessing them in in cities that have got bans, to carry, open carry or concealed carry without license, all of this, and as the last push before a Joe Biden administration, right? And had they decided to take up these cases, it could have changed things in a very, very dramatic way. I think by kicking that can down the road, they're sending a message also. Mike is right. Judge Roberts is proving to be a moderating force on the court, and it's his court. And I think he's very, very well aware that Trump was trying to hijack the court and turn it into a weapon system that answers to him. And I think that by not taking these cases up, he's completely taken a political and a money-making machine out of the hands of conservatives, because now guns will be on the books. I mean, these laws will remain on the books, whatever bans and restrictions, until after the next presidential election. And if it changes, if Ruth Bader Ginsburg could just hold out in there, I'm sending her free virtual exercise lessons, next year the court could be very different.
And Alan, I think I want to get back to the initial point that you made, which dovetails to what Malcolm was saying. But with this activity and the jubilation by many, I think we can realistically expect many more 5-4 decisions down the road.
Well, you could, but I don't think so. I hate to say it because I know it will draw a negative reaction from all of you, but I think you're all a bunch of goody two shoes, and that you have decided that Roberts is good, that they're deciding it based on the law. But I don't think so. I think that there is a greater issue here about where we are going with a bunch of decisions that are going to be coming up, like DACA and the rest. So we'll see. I like what Rosemary said a lot. How did you put it, Rosemary?
Yeah.
We'll see. I think I'm in between. between Allen and the goody two-shoes. I do not think Roberts is good. I do not think that he balances, oh, we got a decision down the road, so we'll give them this. If they were really acting the way they're supposed to as these conservative stalwarts, they would just, like, take over the court. They would just give all the decisions over to conservatives. This was, they actually saw the law and said, yeah, there's only one way we can rule on this. And I don't think you're going to see them ruling this way, for example, on issues involving the press or women's reproductive rights. But gay and lesbian rights is a little more clearly protected by law. And
how much,
that's all it is.
So and Rosemary, how much do you think what's going on in the streets influences the way that judges act?
I think it does influence what acts, but don't forget the oral decision, the oral discussions on this.
Oh, yeah, it was before.
The decision was long before George Floyd on this one. This has nothing to do with that, I think.
And so my point was the 5-4 decisions that we've been seeing for so long, leaning in the conservative favor, Alan, you were saying no, but we'll see more of those, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, if I'm right, you'll see more of them.
Right.
If I'm wrong and people like Rosemary and, you know, the rest of the crew are right, we won't. They'll be, you know, they'll do the right thing, but as Spike Lee would have said. But
almost always, a huge preponderance of cases rules unanimously because their decisions are kind of just rote checks on the what lower courts have done. So the 5-4 decisions are all in the cases that we most care about, and there's a lot of important cases coming up. So it's going to be something that we observe. It's not really statistically true that there'll be more 5-4 decisions, I think.
I'll be reminding all of you about this conversation.
And there you go. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We also will include your letters. We have many, but we welcome yours. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Malcolm Nance making up the panel this morning. We do have letters regarding the Supreme Court and what we've been talking about in our first half hour. Let me get to a couple of those. Mike says, I'd like to clarify the assignment of SCOTUS decisions. Whatever side the Chief Justice is on, he assigns the opinion for that side. Whatever side the Chief is not on, that opinion is signed by the Senior Justice. Sometimes, whichever side the Chief is on, he could assign himself and likewise the Senior Justice on the other side. But those two justices control the assignment of opinions.
I don't want in any way to quarrel about this, but Rosemary was absolutely right in
what
she
said. That's exactly what she said, yes. But yes, so they're really, well, we'll clarify what Rosemary said. Okay, meaning.
Well, I'm not sure what I said that was wrong. I
mean, you didn't say anything wrong.
You said it right.
We're clarifying what you said correctly. We're clarifying that it was absolutely correct. Mary says that the Supreme Court's decision on LGBT employment rights is great, but it does not reverse Trump's life-threatening recent rulings that decrease LGBT rights to health care, education, and housing. I think a point you also made, Rosemary.
Yeah, it's not that the court said slap this down right away. The difficulty now is that Trump's executive order is based on air. In fact, it's now counter to laws defined by the Supreme Court. So it can be challenged, and whoever challenges is very likely to win.
Dave says, remember, Roberts said the Supreme Court is neither liberal nor conservative. Maybe by giving Gorsuch the opinion, Roberts was just affirming his position. Also,
well, no, I think what he said is it's neither Republican or Democratic. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but of course he was wrong. It is. It's 5-4 in the major decisions so far. So you get an extraordinary decision like this, it doesn't mean that the truth is not clear.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of letters about people correcting us on things that we already said correctly. But all right, so I'm just going to skip over those.
Go ahead, we'll fight with him.
Yeah, that would be fun. Let's see, this one is okay. Steven says, ironic that Scalia's replacement decided for LGBT rights while Kennedy's decided against them. That from Steve. Then Judy says, does this mean those transgender people who had to leave the service eligible to get their jobs and status back? I think we touched on that, didn't we? That's what you were talking about, Malcolm, right?
Yeah, we're not sure.
Bob says there is a legitimate argument to make that Gorsuch stepped outside his lane and joining the liberal justices with his gay rights decision. As a literalist, he could have very easily decided that the meaning of the word sex in the Title VII decision meant male and female. I think his choosing to see sex as inclusive of orientation reflects the warm personal relationships that he's had with gay people, including having two openly gay clerks. That was also a big part of Kennedy's pro-gay rulings when he was on the court, and Gorsuch clerked for Justice Kennedy. That from Bob. So let's move on to other subjects as we go through and we look at police reforms. President Trump is to unveil police reform proposals. What we know is that he'll take executive action some point today that would provide new federal funding incentives for local police departments to beef up training over the use of force and strengthen a national database to track misconduct. Trump's order, the product of collaboration with law enforcement groups and families of suspects killed by police, aims to address the mass protests over police brutality that have convulsed American cities. Yet even as the president described his measures as pretty comprehensive, they are expected to fall far short of the kind of sweeping reforms that activists from Black Lives Matter and other social justice groups have demanded, such as significantly reducing funding for police departments and directing the money to social programs. Administration officials emphasized that Trump's approach would instead seek to leverage federal grant money to encourage local departments to bolster training and certification around a set of national best practices. Departments that pursue such goals would move to the front of the line for the grant funding, and you don't necessarily have to demonize them or withdraw funds, said a senior administration official who spoke on the condition of anonymity to brief reporters ahead of the Trump announcement. Mike Spain, what do you make of this?
Yeah, you know, the rule to report and track police killings of civilians was put in effect by law back in 2014, but the Justice Department hasn't done it. It hasn't compiled those numbers largely because the states and the localities have not been compliant in reporting them. So we really don't know, and I don't know why that's going to change now, because Trump says we have to track it now. And that would be a very embarrassing figure, because it would show the numbers of people that are dying in the streets by actions of police. Now, some of those are gunmen who are shooting at police, and they are certainly legitimate uses of lethal force. But in many cases, they're not. And you know, I think what Trump's people are trying to do here by saying best practices is somehow saying, you know, there's a lot of good police out there, and there are. And there's a lot of good police departments who are doing enlightening things, you know, with the community, and there are, and focusing on that rather than focus on the bad apples. But, you know, the bad apples are only a result of bad police policy and bad institutional policy. And this does not even begin to address that, I think.
Alan?
Well, the there was a book, wasn't there, the Rotten Barrel. You look, police stick together. There's no question about the thin blue line, and we know it. Rosemary's made the point, and she is right, that there are a lot of very good cops out there. I appreciate that. But the answer here is that Trump must have taken a look at the television set, seen tens of thousands of people out in the streets, knew that there were a lot of young people out there, and said, I just can't go against this. I have to do something that will give me some prestige where this whole thing is going. And I think that's what he did.
Malcolm.
I think Alan's right. And one of the things that I know we talk about quite often when we come on here is Donald Trump's desire to peel away part of the African-American vote. And that part of the African-American vote that he has been targeting has been African-American men. And I think that as he has watched these protests blaze all over the country and show not just the African-American community behind it, but an overwhelming majority of Americans who think that African-Americans are being discriminated against, they're being abused at a much greater level, and that this is focused almost exclusively on the deaths of young African-American men, and in one incident, a young woman who was killed in her own home, he sees his chance to take away part of the black vote dissipating dramatically. Otherwise, I don't think he would have lifted a finger. I think he would have pushed the, you know, his law and order mantra onto everybody else. And he is doing that because he has to play this game with two parts. One, his overwhelming 73% of white men who voted for him as his base. And then he still has to see this electoral strategy of peeling off what he thinks he wants is he wants 14% of African-American men. And he thinks that he could get up to 9% of African-Americans. He's at 3% of African-Americans and plunging to the point where you have senators like Tim Scott openly coming out and you know, discussing the plight of African-American males in America with the hands of the police. But I don't think Trump sees anything other than a political problem here. He doesn't care about black people. He is an open racist. He is an active white supremacist. He mollycoddles these people, and he sees it all as these are my base. I have to keep them happy. But now I've got to throw a bone to African Americans in order to keep my, you know, chances for peeling off a few black men.
10 points to Gryffindor for the use of mollycoddle. Rosemary.
Well, I have a different point of view. I don't think he cares at all about the black vote, nor do I think what Trump is offering in the way of reform addresses at all the concerns that we've been seeing out in the streets in the past couple of weeks. And he worked with, he and his minions worked with police chiefs, and it's all settled on training and better preparation. It's still the bad apple model that he's going after. He would really change nothing. And I think Cuomo is smart enough to see. One could fault him for not doing this much earlier because why did it take 44 years to repeal secrecy on police records, for one example? But at any rate, Cuomo is well aware that his reforms are far more sweeping. Just his review, his local review and reform programs could result in actual defunding, if you want, in some places. That is theoretically possible. They're far more sweeping than what Trump has proposed, and I think he's going to use that politically, just like he stood out for gay rights and women's rights and gun control. Now he's got police reform to add to his portfolio. I think he's aware of that. And I don't care about their motivation. I don't think Cuomo necessarily cares all that much about the black voters to accept that he's more dependent on them than Trump has been. But as long as they do the right thing, that's fine with me. It's like Gorsuch ruling in favor of gay employment rights. I don't think he loves gay people, but he did the right thing, and that's all we should as voters be concerned with.
We're going to take a break. We'll pause there. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Malcolm Nance are here. We'll include your letters, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Malcolm Nance. And we, of course, welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. Robert writes to us and says, could the panel please explain why a Supreme Court justice has to act in accordance with the views of the president who appointed her or him? It's a lifetime position. It seems like that gives the justice the freedom to act in any way that he or she desires without fear of being voted out or fired. Alan, you've spoken many times about this.
I have, and obviously you dance with the one who brought you. And they do a tremendous amount of research to find out that whoever they appoint is going to do what they want. And so there is that. And, you know, that kind of research pays off. But it is true that they can do what they want, and that some judges in the history of this court have gone heavily against the presidents who appointed them, but it's become a fine art now. Over to you, Rosemary.
No, that you did a good job. I don't have anything to add to that. This is on Trump, who miscalculated, apparently, maybe, we'll see, not on Gorsuch doing anything wrong.
Mike?
Yeah, no, I think that it's rather than the judge, you know, being loyal to the president that appointed him or her, it's a case of the president very carefully with a lot of research and a lot of data picking a judge that's going to do the things that he wants to do. And in this case, they do miscalculate sometimes. I think they did here.
And Malcolm?
I think Donald Trump runs things in the order of a mafia don. He thinks that he is buying Supreme Court justices. And there are people whispering in his ear that as he makes a more conservative bench, they will demur to him. So that being the case, that doesn't mean that Gorsuch was going to do that on this particular case. I don't think that this case matters at all to Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump, if he is not president of the United States in 6 months, it will be very important that he think that these justices will get him off the hook. And right now, you know, he said that many times, that I have the Supreme Court. He doesn't understand what the Supreme Court is, but he does understand that, you know, putting people on the appellate courts, the federal, other federal bench positions, creates a Trump court. But it remains to be seen whether this court is going to be Trump's in his pocket. I don't think so.
You know, I'm going to be seen as being some of my liberal friends are not going to like what I have to say, and I don't want them to misinterpret it. But remember what happened here. Trump gave this over to the Federalist Society people to make these decisions and to come up with these names, and they did. Now, that means, and here's where the trouble comes, that means that in terms of their precepts of what their basic core principles are, they are from the Federalist Society, right? Does anybody disagree with that? And so if that is the case, then it is not a house of ill repute. They believe that they are consistent with their fundamental intellectual values. Now, do I like their values? No. Hello out there. I don't like them. Nevertheless, that's where the difference comes, that Trump thinks that they're personally responsible to him, and they think that it's their core conservative principles which are important.
Do you think somebody had to stop him from calling Gorsuch last night?
or tweeting Gorsuch. Tweeting Gorsuch.
Yes.
I think Biden must be extremely happy now. He now has a response every time Trump brings up that talking point of, I got you the Supreme Court you wanted.
Yeah.
So
we get this letter from Trudaine, who says that this is to our earlier discussion of police reform and the concern over the protesting in the street and, of course, the tragic killings of George Floyd, the most recent killing in Atlanta. Thank you for always bringing your best insights to the events of the day. My love to each and every one of you. The recent spate of black men being found hanging from trees is troubling, to say the least. The police have been very quick to characterize each of the incidents as suicide before the investigations have concluded, in some cases before the investigations were even begun. Robert Fuller, Malcolm Harsh, and one yet unnamed black man found in Port Tryon Park in Manhattan, all within weeks of each other. Is it conspiratorial to worry that these quote-unquote suicides are actual lynchings? I just wanted to hear all of your thoughts. Malcolm, let's begin with you.
I'm not sure. African-American people, we commit suicide also. That it would come at this time is interesting, and in the manner is also interesting. But you know what? I'm going to leave that particular one up to the up to the forensic pathologists that have been and who have been making rulings on this. I think speculating that far into it is a little dangerous.
Rosemary?
Well, the number and the manner of suicide at this time is highly suspicious, and I'm also concerned by that first autopsy done on George Floyd that pointed to a heart condition that a subsequent autopsy said did not even exist. So I worry about those initial rulings, but it looks now that because the press has thrown a lot of attention on it, as have demonstrators, I think that it will be investigated fully.
I keep thinking of Michael Maripol, remember A. Maripol?
Yep.
He wrote the classic song on this issue, which is "Strange Fruit," and that's the father, the adopted father of Mike Maripol, who's of course the child of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. It is too close for comfort for me. It may well be, Malcolm. I was listening to you very carefully. It may well be that somebody chose to do it in that to do suicide in that way in order to make a point about lynching. I don't know, or about American lynching, but it's very uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable, and you can certainly understand our listeners asking the question, given the circumstances that we're going through now. Mike, did you want to weigh in on that?
No, I'll go back to Malcolm and say, yes, these need to be fully investigated. And just given the nature of things, we need to be, doubly sure that it is what the initial finding was. And it's certainly reasonable to go back and double check. There's ample evidence in some of the cases that these people were not suicidal, but often that is the case, and we don't know what's going on inside people's heads. But before judging it, we need a lot more information.
We read that letter. Go ahead, Michael. Malcolm, go ahead.
I was just going to make a quick point. The one thing that has surprised me over the last 2 weeks that I've seen in these protests and incidents, the police really lie. I mean, we are seeing falsified police reports that are everywhere. Every incident has had one where they have mischaracterized the incidents to the point where they felt the impunity of lying because they're the police. And which is why we should be triply careful on someone that takes their life, so long as, the evidence is there.
So as we look, and this from the New York Times this morning, but under growing pressure from demonstrators outraged over the police killings of African Americans, officials across the country announced major police reforms on Monday. Again, this dovetails to what the president is doing today, further galvanizing a protest movement that has led to a nationwide reckoning over systemic racism. The New York Police Commissioner Dermot Shea announced he was disbanding the police department's anti-crime unit, a team of hundreds of plainclothes officers that targeted violent crime and that was involved in some of the city's most notorious police shootings. The Attorney General of California unveiled a series of recommended measures for police forces in the state, including banning chokeholds, requiring officers to intervene when colleagues use excessive force, and forbidding officers from firing shots at moving vehicles or from them, with rare exceptions. And in Albuquerque, political leaders said that the city would take money from the budget of its scandal-plagued police force to create a new community safety department that would likely respond to calls related to homelessness, addiction, and mental health. Alan.
And as you mentioned, Joe, previously, Governor Cuomo has been in the forefront, of this and making all of these reforms. I had a program with him yesterday in which we discussed his plan to make every single locality in New York State come up with a reform plan. Now, I tried to intimate nicely, because I'd like him to come back, there are plenty of communities in the state, in New York State, of course, which, still have, racist majorities in them and are not about to start up. So the idea that every one of them would come up with a reform plan is a nice idea, but whether or not that actually works, I don't know.
Rosemary?
Well, I like that he's trying it. And if you do have a racist majority, I did hear that really good discussion yesterday, Alan. If there is a racist majority that's going to prevail, they're going to have to state it all on the open in a public hearing. And that in itself is valuable. It can be used to fight actions and bad policies later on.
Well, you never know. I mean, you may be right that it can be, but there's always words to cover up what you really mean. Are you following me?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Skepticism is always healthy.
And that's my middle name, Alan S. Skeptic Shartok.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters as always. Panel at WAMC.org. If you're right, you can join Alan Shartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Malcolm Nance in the discussion. We hope you do so. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. And we have a great panel going on, and we hope you will take part in it. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Shartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Malcolm Nance. We're going to move on to some other topics in just a second, but we do have a few letters that I want to get to. Carolita says, I agree with Alan that it could be an unintended consequence that majority racist communities could end up further enabling institutional racism in their police departments. I feel like Cuomo making it the personal responsibility of each area to reform their own police department is a bit of kicking the can. There needs to be more oversight. Also, no one has said anything yet about union reform. Well, not on this program, but we have, not today, but we certainly have talked about it extensively on this program. The blue wall was not what unions were created for. This is not what people died to create when unions were first formed. Rosemary, you want first crack at that?
Well, yeah, we have talked about it before. I think there's, and Governor Cuomo said this yesterday, too, there is absolutely nothing wrong with unions defending their people to the hilt. But when your people are also working for the public, there has to be some view of the public, too, and that's what's missing, so that you defend people who should not be defended. And this is no different than, as I've said, the Newspaper Guild, which will defend plagiarists and fabulists who should be booted out of the business, or teachers' unions who defend horrible teachers who should be taken out of commission. So I would like to see the unions not disbanded, not weakened, but I'd like to see their missions reformed.
Alan?
Well, look, we've said it a million times. If these folks who are running these unions want a ticket out of their office, they don't defend their people, even in the most despicable acts that these folks do. So we know what they're doing. And it doesn't, and Rosemary's right, it doesn't come down to the, you know, to the policeman's union or to the police person's union. It comes down to what has happened to the union movement in the United States of America. We know that. You know, one day I was, it may not be an appropriate story to tell, but I was walking into the station, and there was a guy who was unloading a cola truck. And I said to him, are you a member of the Teamsters Union? He said, yes, and God bless them. I mean, you know, people, we're well paid, we're well fed, we have decent lives, and that's because of our leadership. You know, I mean, that's how it is.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, I'll go back to the other point that the writer mentioned, and that is, I think, a legitimate question about Governor Cuomo's, I think, very progressive plan to require each police department in every community to come up with a reform plan. How do you really manage that, and how do you provide the proper oversight? Who's going to make sure that each one does and that it isn't just some perfunctory report? We looked at our department and found out that we're perfect. You know, I mean, it's going to need, you know, some mechanism to work with local police departments. And, you know, I agree. I think it's going to be an obstacle. Police unions may dig in. They need to understand that it's in their interest and their officers, members' interests to to improve the way that they are police officers.
But, Mike, the police are very powerful. They really are. I mean, even in my little town years ago, I took on a bunch of people who were cops, who, and it was maybe one of the stupidest things I've ever done. And they weren't quiet about it. And I have to tell you, we won. That department got cleaned up and the rest of it. But I'll tell you, everybody knows that at some point, something's going to happen and you may need a cop. And it's very, very hard for a community to turn around, or a mayor or a city council, and say, okay, cops, we've got you under our microscope.
Yeah, it doesn't happen overnight. It takes leadership, and it takes a commitment of resources and the backing of the political structure, and it has to last more than one politician's term or one police chief's term. It has to be a change in culture. I've seen very positive things in the Capital Region over the years. You had a movement towards police, community policing in Albany that was very successful. They've fallen back a little bit, but I think that they are in the right direction. And Schenectady, one of the most corrupt police departments historically in the state, has made great strides, but it took years, and it takes a commitment. And what's behind that commitment is the public's demand. I mean, the public insistence that you have to change the way you do policing. Everybody can do better. And how do you make it happen? That's the
issue. I don't think that Cuomo sees this as a cure-all. What he did was put one more tool into the hands of activists and citizens who can use. If there's a place that just rubber stamps what's there, it's up to the community to say, wait a minute, what is this? And also, we're talking about, the reform is going to be under something major. It could be very simple things that that are not codified but ought to be. And I think, why not? I think it's a good idea.
I agree with you. I agree with you, Rosemary. I do. But on the other hand, it is clear to me that there are communities which don't have people of color in them, or have very few, and who, who have no interest at all in reformation of the police force, who they consider a protective force for their privileged interests.
Hey,
Malcolm.
Malcolm. All very interesting. But I think what's happening here, and this will impact the unions, is that we are going through a national cultural revolution about what the role of the police are and how far their authority extends. 2 weeks ago, before the shooting of George Floyd, despite some of the other more horrific incidents, police operated with full impunity. And let me tell you something. I train with law enforcement. I love law enforcement. I work with them. I consider them brothers, but they have a mindset that has been militarized since 9/11. When I mean militarized, I mean in the sense not just that they get military equipment and everything, body armor and everything, but in the sense that they believe that they are warriors in this great battle against crime, and that their procedures, which are to a certain extent, are nationalized. They do training. They have people who come around and do training all of the time on use of force, on when you should shoot, don't shoot, and that, when anything threatens a law enforcement officer or perceived to be, they kill. And I think what's happening now is that there is this cultural outcry against them being able to escalate straight to lethal force for nothing. And what I see this week is I see fear from the police unions that they're at the point where, look, police departments aren't going to be defunded, but they will have their budgets cut to the point where they're going to have to get rid of a lot of officers. And we are at the lowest crime rate in the history of the United States. So that will weaken their power, and they could find cultural and community restrictions, which don't really impact policing, but certainly impact policemen and their representation in these unions. And that's why I think they're suddenly coming to the table.
And maybe it's time. It's time that we get them to more of a protect and serve attitude than a defending you against ISIS, Al-Qaeda, who are coming over the walls type attitude.
Anybody else? We got a letter from...
I think you're right. I think you're really right, Malcolm. This is big, and it is more than the kind of small pro forma reforms that we've seen in the past. Good point.
Rosemary, have you have first crack at this letter? Trump is going through with this executive order not to gain black voters, but to win back women. When George Floyd called out for his mother, I believe it caused white women to see the child in that suffering, dying man, and it stirred something deep. Trump knows he can't win without the women who supported him in 2016.
Well, at the risk of getting the same attack that Biden did, if you're a woman and you don't know whether to vote for Trump or against him, you are not really a woman. There's just no self-interest involved.
Touche.
I want to go back to what Malcolm said in terms of the worldview that the police have. As we saw in this last case, somebody grabs a taser, runs away with it, turns around allegedly fires it at the cops. A cop then fires three bullets into this guy's back. Now, we know what happened. The question is, what was in the minds of those cops who are now, facing arrest and murder charges? And that is, I go back to what Malcolm said, the absolute conviction that that was okay under the old rules.
Yeah, you nailed it there, Alan. That's exactly it. Hey, somebody messes with me while I'm doing my job, they deserve, they face the consequences up to and including dying. That's exactly it. That's a bad mentality, but I think that's far too prevalent with some police officers.
It's prevalent for a reason. It's because, again, since 9/11, the mindset has completely changed to this warrior officer mindset. Look, I know some of these guys. I worked with the state police, to get them capable for dealing with ISIS and Al-Qaeda. But if you're not face-to-face with ISIS and Al-Qaeda, you should be more like British police, right? Who, I don't know if you met those guys. They're very jovial. They're very nice. They're very polite. Maybe we should, instead of sending our cops to Israel, which a lot of them go there for quote-unquote counterterrorism training, and they use the neck. The neck press is very popular there. We should start sending them to small towns in Western England, or the Midlands of England, to see what community policing really is like. They don't carry guns. Armed response units are there. You should not. Granted, we're completely awash with guns, and that's why they need to have guns. But they could have let that guy with the taser run away once he expended it, and just said, "You know what? We're going to get you with your house."
You got it. They knew his license number. They knew where he lived.
They could have just followed him. He was drunk on his butt. He was asleep in the car. And they knew that from a 40-minute encounter with him before this. It's just such a bad judgment to kill a man over something like that.
Well, also a black man. I mean, that's the other part of this. Would that guy have been killed if he was white?
Negative. We already painfully saw a good example. Yeah. Was put out recently of a white motorist with his wife standing off to the side who tussles with two policemen, a policeman and a policewoman, takes their baton and beats them both, then steals his car, and he gets away and is arrested politely, right? He is not sentenced to death in that instance.
That's
law enforcement in many parts of this country believe that one side of the tracks, I will go straight to my gun, the other side, I will have a negotiation and bring them to Burger King.
But do you think it's that kind of a decision, or if it's more, knee-jerk reaction? When I look at that guy, he doesn't look like me. He looks like somebody else from the other side of the tracks. But when I look at the white guy, he looks like my family. He looks like my neighborhood, and I can handle this. I mean, I think that's the problem with bias and it goes deeper. It needs to be brought out and dealt with. But
it's very deep. and their escalation of force in the possession of firearms. Is African Americans with firearms bad? White Americans with firearms, my NRA shooting range partner. And so they can have guns in the car and they will behave differently. You know, I met the state trooper who pulled Timothy McVeigh over after he had 1 hour after he had blown up 186 people in Oklahoma City. And when McVeigh was asked, you know, are you carrying any firearms? He showed it to the cop joyfully, like, you are one of us. And the cop suddenly realized, oh, my God, I'm face to face with a terrorist. And he looked like me. And that was one of the few times that we had breakthrough. These armed guys, there was a shooting in Albuquerque yesterday of a protester by an armed militia man who was there to defend a statue being brought down. Hasn't hit the mainstream media yet, but the protester's in critical condition. The state troopers were not in between these two groups until there was a shooting. And they referred to the militia as armed friendlies. This whole mindset has to stop.
Malcolm, let me just stay with you. We have a letter from Kara who is writing about police and guns. Can you talk about the growing ownership of guns and police being overcautious and afraid of being shot?
You know, that's just the standard. I agree with it. This country is awash with guns. I'm guilty of that. I'm a gun owner. But I don't conceal carry. I don't open carry. You know, I'm a sports shooter. These people who are open carrying and concealed carrying, even here where I live in Columbia County, there are no zombie hordes here. I tell my neighbors
are you sure?
who have concealed carry licenses that, you know, the only thing that's going to come at you here is gophers and deer. And why are they concealed carrying? I actually had to kick a person out of my house and have him clear his weapon because he bought a concealed firearm into my home, which is no-go, right? What the mindset of people with these guns is that they have to have them. On the other hand, law enforcement must be careful because there are so many guns. Guns in the, you know, in many predominantly black areas are stolen. I've seen many of them that are stolen. They don't know how to carry them. They don't use them. They don't open carry. It's all illegal concealed carry. But then you have these guys who are open carrying guns in an attempt to intimidate entire populations, and you get shootings like we had yesterday. You know, the whole gun culture of these guns exist to overthrow the government, that is 100% on the NRA. But a lot of these law enforcement guys, they look at these militiamen and people who are armed with AR-15s, and they see ideological brothers. But cops have to be careful. I warn them all the time. It is going to be a posse comitatus, an anti-government extremist that's going to go to guns with you, is going to go shoot with you, not an ISIS terrorist supporter.
Eric writes, there have been calls for police to patrol without guns and criticism of the militaristic attitude of cops. One must consider that there are millions of guns in the hands of Americans and police don't know when they will come up against them. Cops, like soldiers, support each other like brothers in the face of such mortal danger. Perhaps all the criticism of Biden for supporting the 1990 crime bill might also acknowledge that he succeeded in getting a ban on automatic weapons, a ban now rescinded by the Republican majority.
Yeah, it was on semi-automatic weapons. And this, I don't blame the cops. I don't blame Biden. I don't blame the assault weapons ban. Here's what I blame. The National Rifle Association. In the mid-70s, they turned the entire organization into this arm yourself to overthrow the government and to protect the government. And now it's coming to roost. Cops can't make a traffic stop or they can't make a entry to a home of anyone without feeling that they're, you know, in the first, you know, the second battle of Fallujah. And that, of course, gives them also the belief that they can kill people with impunity because nothing happens once they do that. That suddenly has changed.
Which, by the way, may be why so many police chiefs, when these gun questions come up, are for more gun control. They know their people are at risk and that they're at risk.
Absolutely.
We just have a few minutes before we go to a bottom of the break, and I want to we have one more letter in the Supreme Court, which is from Kevin, who says, just wondering if the Supreme Court was mentioned by presidents 30 years ago as much as it is now. Listening to Trump talk about the Supreme Court makes me sick. Alan, any thoughts on that?
I don't know. You know, you think back to Franklin Roosevelt and what the trouble he had with the court when he assumed office, and he tried to pack the court. And we remember that this was one of the things that he did, which was so reprehensible to so many people. It was when an early battle that he really lost. But he did make it clear that it was the court that was standing in the way of what he was trying to get done.
Right. I want to talk about the coronavirus, of course. Coronavirus recommendations ignored as case numbers rise. The infections continue to rise in many parts of a divided nation, with public health recommendations under attack from communities tired of staying home and officials eager to restart local economies. So what do you do about it? Well, you ignore it, of course. Even as the number of infections rose and hospital beds filled in some places, voices clamored for an end to mandatory mask wearing and relaxation of restrictions designed to curb the novel coronavirus continued. They're either just over it or they've come to believe it's a phony pandemic because their own personal grandmother hasn't been affected yet, said Andrew Neumer, an epidemiologist at the University of California at Irvine. Elected officials last week forced the county health department to scale back a mask-wearing order. Police just think this is a nothing burger, so they think the risk is being exaggerated. Two associations of local health officials released a statement warning that public health department officials and staff have been physically threatened and politically scapegoated, and the vital work of public health departments is also being challenged. Public health departments are facing lawsuits over their authority to close businesses, schools, and places of worship in order to protect the community at large. The very action that is credited with saving hundreds of thousands of American lives from this virus, the National Association of County and City Officials and the quote coming from the National Association of County and City Health Officials and the Big Cities Health Coalition. 10 states: Alabama, Arkansas, California, Florida, Nevada, North Carolina, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas hit new highs for hospitalized patients on Monday, according to data maintained by the Washington Post. Rosemary.
Well, it's so sinister because to follow instructions, to create an atmosphere of we have to protect each other and we have to get rid of this and our restrictions, horrible as they are, have actually saved lives. We have a president whose entire campaign reelection is built on something different. Politico has a great story today about how Republican Party chairman at the state level are predicting not just a win for Trump, but the opposite of what Alan has predicted, a landslide for Trump this year. And it's all built on pumping up the economy and getting back to work and getting jobs and working for you, the working class people. And he's winning with that. And he is winning with the idea of reopening the economy and winning back what we lost because of this terrible pandemic that was just an invention of the Democrats and the media. And that is working. Terrifying to me to think of this, but this is what happens when you turn public health into a political battle, when you politicize it. So because of that, yeah, we're absolutely seeing that people are blaming the media for trying to scare people, and they're going back to life as it was before March.
So just to be clear, Rosemary, because I want somebody to note it who has a pen and paper, you're predicting that this will work and that Trump will win re-election.
I am not predicting that. I am quoting state.
No, but you have said it.
Republicans in Pennsylvania, for example, Alan, they are predicting that he will win it by 100,000 votes. That's double what he wanted in 2016. And it's on this illusion that he's working for the working class people, getting them back to work and getting them back to life as it used to be.
But people are desperate to hear good news. They want to be told things are getting better. They want to think that we're like New Zealand and we can go back into stadiums again. And rather than hear reality, they don't want the truth. They want to hear what makes them feel good. Listen, over the weekend, Steve McLaughlin, he's the county executive in Rensselaer County, he was tweeting that people should ignore Cuomo's stupid phases and saying that he's power hungry and urging all the businesses in Rensselaer County to fully open, which I think is reckless and it's divisive. I mean, not just the states Joe mentioned, 22 states are seeing spikes right now. And idiot politicians are playing it in their favor, and it's short-term gain and long-term pain.
Every time I go into the supermarket and see some guy without a mask on, I say, this guy's trying to kill me. I don't know. I think there are an awful lot of people out there who are very unhappy with the fact that people are not obeying the rules. And in fact, I've seen polling, Roseberry, for whatever it's worth. I know that you're referring to the Politico article, but I've seen polling which says that vast numbers of people think that everybody ought to be wearing a mask.
We'll be right back. It's the roundtable panel, a last call. We just have about 15 minutes left or so. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We have Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Malcolm Nance. We welcome your letters. We go to Barbara, who says, remember the psychology test for preschoolers where an experimenter placed a mini marshmallow in front of the child and promised a second one later if they could control the impulse to eat the first one for several minutes. The American people have failed the COVID marshmallow test. Yeah.
Good letter.
Yeah, I agree with that. Let's see. We also go to Rosemary's comment about you ain't a woman is a topic that I, as a man, have had to struggle to understand. The only answer that my research has revealed is that Republican white women would rather be second-class citizens within the privileged class than members of an egalitarian society. Rosemary, anything on that?
Okay. Yeah, I can buy that.
Okay.
I would put the word some. I would put the word some there.
Yeah, thank
none,
goodness.
Not all, yeah.
I think that some is 53% of white women. That's the numbers.
Let's see. We go to Gary, who says, for those who think that police have one of the most dangerous jobs in the country, look at the list. Truck driver number 5, many others above police in the danger list. Okay. Let's go to another topic, which is, we'll talk politics for a few minutes. And I'm interested in this race, and it's the Elliott Engel race. Hillary Clinton is backing Elliott Engel. That is her first House party endorsement of 2020. Mr. Engel is a longtime New York representative trying to fend off a serious challenge from Jamal Bowman, who has been endorsed by Bernie Sanders and AOC. And so now Hillary Clinton comes into it and delivered the endorsement, throwing her support behind Engel, who is trying to fend off this challenge from his left after more than 3 decades in Congress. Mrs. Clinton said in a statement, I have worked with Elliott Engel as a first lady, as senator from New York, and as secretary of state. Every step of the way, his number one priority has always remained the same, delivering for his constituents. The endorsement puts Mrs. Clinton on the opposite side of a wave of progressives who are backing Mr. Engel's leading challenger. Alan, what do you make of the endorsement? What do you make of the race?
Let me just say, I have interviewed him a number of times. Let me also say, whoever's calling me, stop it. Okay. just to whoever was calling me, stop it.
We currently have a dial tone. Is that?
Oh yeah. What's that?
I don't know.
Okay.
Okay.
There
that did it.
Yeah, okay. All gone.
Sorry about that.
That's
Gary,
all right.
I really am. So the answer is I've interviewed Elliott Engel. He represents, I believe, places like Co-op City. He went to Hunter College about the same time I did. He's younger than I am, I believe. He is vulnerable in the same way that AOC won her race. He's vulnerable to the same winds of change that are out there. So he's scared, obviously, and you bring Hillary into it. Whether Hillary is popular enough to sway all of those people who may have some minority status or otherwise is another whole story. But Let me tell you, she's not coming in because Engel is a sure winner. She's coming in because he's in danger.
What do you think is making him so vulnerable, Alan?
Oh, I think that it's the winds of change. I think people are recognizing that the same old doesn't work. It's probably what lost for Hillary when she ran, that there were a number of people, not everybody, of course, certainly not me, but who felt that she was too much of the old way of doing things. And I think that that he is. Now, he's a very powerful chairman. I believe he's the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. And
Foreign Affairs, yeah.
Foreign Affairs Committee. And that is a huge, that is a huge job. But it hasn't stopped others who have huge jobs in the Congress from being defeated in primaries.
Mike, talk a little bit about, I mean, one of the criticisms that he's facing is that he was absent from the district during coronavirus and was not around. So I asked that question of how much do you think that will have an impact, but also how much do you think a Hillary Clinton endorsement, especially in that district, will have an impact?
Well, first of all, there are parallels with Joe Crowley. He's the congressman who elects Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez beat 2 years ago in that stunning primary surprise. Engel himself, you know, Joe Crowley was moving up. I think he was number three in the House leadership.
He was going to be the speaker.
Side.
Yeah, saying he was going to be the speaker. Yeah.
But when you become the House Foreign Affairs Committee chair and you're embedded in the whole process in Washington, where like Joe Crowley moving your way up in leadership, you tend to ignore the home district. You don't spend as much time there, and that's when Ocasio-Cortez was able to really build the coalition, and that same kind of thing is going on now. It's an interesting district. It's part Westchester and part Bronx, but the part of Westchester that it's in is lower Westchester, which is much more urban than up where Hillary lives. And, it is the winds of change, Alan. I mean, what we're really witnessing here in microcosm is a battle for the future of the party. Is it going to be the AOCs and Bernie Sanders types that run it, or is it going to be the Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton traditionalists? Nancy Pelosi also endorsed Engel. It's a whole battle for the future of the party.
And there will always be somebody of ambition. I mean, I got to tell you, I interview all these people on the congressional corner, and my absolute favorite is Richie Neal, who I think is one of the brightest guys ever. But there's a mayor of Holyoke who says, well, I'll take a shot. Why not? There are constituents who will go for that and say, yeah, well, this other guy's been there too long. That would be a great shame, I think. But nevertheless, it could certainly happen, and we all know it.
Rosemary.
Well, I think the real issue here is what is Hillary doing? I think this is just an old-fashioned being loyal to an old friend guy, and so I take her endorsement with a grain of salt. Ocasic, AOC is also, what is she doing with her endorsements? I don't get her and Bernie, for example, voting against or recommending against the woman who's running against
McConnell.
Kentucky, yeah, and McConnell. So the same race here. I think she is on more solid ground to be endorsing against him. Hillary's on the wrong side here, but like I take endorsements with a grain of salt anyway. I don't think that Hillary needs to shut up. Nobody else who's lost in races, take McCain for Romney, for example, he still talks, and so Hillary has the right to do that. But in this case, I don't think maybe we ought to listen to her.
Hmm. Malcolm?
Makes sense?
Yeah, it does.
It's like, fine. You can endorse, but I don't have to listen to it. And the same with AOC's endorsements.
Okay. Yeah, I have no dog in this fight. However, I have to point out that people that have been endorsed by Bernie Sanders and the more progressive candidates, maybe Ocasio-Cortez was the clarion call for paying attention to these races they thought were short. But the Bernie Sanders camp has not done well at all. They've been soundly rejected by him and people he's endorsed. So, the progressive challengers need to beware as well.
We just have about 3 minutes or so. Malcolm, ever since you said something about a militia member who was detained after a man was shot at an Albuquerque protest and said that it hadn't made the mainstream media. And I was looking for that, trying to find the story. I knew I had sort of heard about it, but I didn't know exactly where. Now, just as of about 10 minutes ago, it's on the front page of The Washington Post. Gunfire left one man in critical condition and set off a public outcry denouncing the presence of the New Mexico Civil Guard and unregulated militia. So what should we watch and be concerned about when we hear these stories?
Well, first off, to see whether these things are the matches that are setting fire to a fuse that could explode all around the country. I monitor right-wing extremism in a real-time basis. I really tried to go to bed last night, and this story had exploded with real-time video.
Right.
They are unregulated militias, and I'm sure that they are terrified that if Donald Trump doesn't win next year, that they're going to suddenly find out what the words unregulated mean, which means unlawful assembly. They could have their, even though they're individuals, they could have their guns taken away from them, which to them is more important than life itself. These are guys who have watched, Last of the Mohicans just one too many times. They think that the gun is an extension of their body and that it is the one right they will fight and kill for. And they love coming to these protests to intimidate people. And that we're going to have a spark here, and it may end up unhealthy.
Anybody else? All right. Stone silence.
There you go.
Stone
silence. It's hard to follow up on Malcolm.
Well, right. Exactly. When Malcolm makes so much sense, what are you going to say next?
All right. So that leads me to the question that I didn't think I was going to have time to ask, and now I have time to ask it. Rosemary, are you going to read the Mary Trump book?
The Melania Trump book?
No,
by Mary Jordan?
No, the Mary Trump, who's the niece.
The niece. Fred's daughter.
The daughter of Fred Jr., who has written a book to be published in July that is exploding the image of a unified Trump family. It's been written to in the post that went up on Amazon last night. It said it's to describe a nightmare of traumas, destructive relationships, and a tragic combination of neglect and abuse.
But you're right, Rosemary.
How did I not know about this? Of course I'm going to read it. Trashy gossip about someone I dislike intensely. Of course I'll read it.
Right. I like the Melania book, too.
That's right.
That's the one I thought.
I want to read that one, too.
Apparently, Melania and Donald aren't on that, according to this thing, that good terms. You see, they just trot her out to do.
I just love that story, though, that she stayed away from Washington at the beginning so she could work on to strengthen the prenup. That's awesome.
Renegotiate.
I don't know if that's true or not, but it's a great story.
Yeah. Well, also that she's the one who put Pence in, that she thought Christie or Newt Gingrich would overshadow Trump. So she's the one who said, oh, yeah, put in that Pence guy. He's a nebbish. He'll just stay in the background. I think that's great, too.
She knows what a nebbish is.
Right.
never mind. And finally, we may have to wait later. The Bolton book was supposed to come out today. We probably will have to wait much longer on that. See what happens on
that one. I'm not going to buy.
Yeah,
he's using your tax dollars defend and bully others with which is one of the things he's well known for as a legal bully, because he has money and he can sue people. But now he's using taxpayer dollars to do it.
All right. We're out of time. I want to thank everybody for being with us. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Malcolm Nance, thank you all for being so great. And we'll be back with the Congressional Corner right after this.